giving yourself up bit by bit to some corporation just so you can live, captive to a fantastic view of that situation that you cling to just to make such a life bearable. A view of reality so transfigured as to be stood on its head, but in its distortions and empty seductions, necessary just to make it through the week. That question is, I think, the heart of the Matrix, and it has only become more pressing over time. Close quote. Now that suddenly there is upon us a new Matrix film, Joshua Clover's book serves as an ideal companion to the original and to its self-referential sequel. Thanks again for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11 will be back next Friday, so until then, keep watching the screens.
I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen, sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills. Some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins, I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Hi, welcome to That Vegan Show. I'm your host, Melissa Lesniak. First up, we're going to have some vegan news. David Michelson has come here to talk to us about IP13. Thanks for being here today, David.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
I'm excited to hear about it. So what is IP13?
For those who are hearing it for the first time, IP13 is a proposed ballot initiative that would remove exemptions from Oregon's animal cruelty laws. Right now, the way our cruelty laws are written in Oregon, they start out fairly broad, such that animal abuse, for instance, is defined very simply as the intentional injuring or killing of an animal. As is very obvious to most of us, especially I imagine our listeners, they're allowed to kill animals for food, they're allowed to hunt animals, they're allowed to experiment on animals. The way they get around the abuse statutes is that there are a number of exemptions. in our cruelty law statutes that just says if an animal is in a research lab, they're exempt from our cruelty laws. If an animal is on a farm, they're exempt from our cruelty laws. If an animal is in the wild and you have a license to kill them, they're exempt from our cruelty laws. So we are trying to remove those exemptions so that the same protection that our companion animals get, all animals will receive in the state of Oregon. Very radical initiative. It would drastically change the legal landscape for animals in our state and would create really, it would turn Oregon into a sanctuary state for all animals within our boundaries.
Wow, that's really incredible. It's funny you say it's radical, and I know it's radical, but sounds exactly right to me. I mean, that's how we think, and it's often difficult to understand like the cognitive dissonance people have about not being cruel to dogs or rabbits or cats, but you know, then treating farm, what they consider farm animals, in a completely different manner.
Yes, it's very intuitive. And when we're on the street getting signatures, that's often the impression people get, because we tell them what we're doing and we explain to them that we are trying to remove these exemptions so that all animals are treated equally. And people know that that's the right thing, that we should have equal protection. They don't understand why there are these exemptions. Oftentimes when we're talking on the street, they don't quite make the full connection as to why those exemptions exist, because these industries really require them in many cases. But it is, yeah, intuitively, it makes sense. It really isn't that radical. It's just radical given the context that we are currently in.
Exactly. Well, I'm really glad to hear this is possibly going to be on the ballot. So when would it go on the ballot?
It would go on the ballot next November, so November 2022, if we get the signatures that we need to qualify, which are due in July of next year. So right now we are out getting signatures and trying to recruit as many volunteers as possible. It is a large number of signatures that we need to get on the ballot. It is 112,020. Anyone who is able to help, we greatly would appreciate the support. If you can volunteer, that's amazing. And if you can't, we also accept donations on our website. And we are trying to use that money to pay petitioners to get signatures as well. So everything we are doing is focused on signature collection.
Okay, and if people wanted to get involved or learn more about it, what is your website?
Our website is yesonip13.org, and we're gonna be hosting events, group signature gathering events. So if you've never collected signatures before and wanna try it out, you can join a team of volunteers. We've been having about 8 to 10 who are showing up regularly to these Saturday morning ones that we did in November. We're gonna be adding in some additional events on Sundays and Wednesdays. And they're going to take place both in Portland and in Eugene in December. So if you are in any of those areas and want to join us out in the morning and potentially in the later afternoon, go to the website, yesonip13.org/get-involved, and you can fill out a volunteer form.
Great. And I will add that to the KBOO page for this show in case people are driving and can't catch it when they hear it.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
We were talking about that we will check in again next year with you, have you come back on the show and, you know, see how the progress is going, see where you are with it at that time. Is there anything else that you think is really important for us to know at this time?
I think that covers it, that we're really just trying to ramp up our volunteer recruitment, and we'll be doing a lot of group events in December, and hopefully when we check in, we'll have some good news, some good new updates for you.
Great. I appreciate you being here and starting this initiative. Like you said, it is like the first of its kind, and I listened to one of your other interviews, and I know you were saying like sometimes things have to be on the ballot a few times before they're passed, so I think this, hopefully that's not the case, but if it is, this sounds like an excellent start to that process. And thank you for all your hard work on this important issue.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care, and we'll check in with you next time.
Take care.
Now we have Katie from Dolly's Dream Home in St. St. Louis, Missouri, which I mentioned on my last show is where I'm from. Thanks for being here today, Katie.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for having me.
So I just, real briefly, I wanted to say how Katie and I met. So I was at home visiting my parents over the summer, and a couple of times I kept seeing this mostly white rabbit, which, you know, I grew up in the area. Usually the rabbits are brown. So we're like, oh, that's the first time we're like, oh, that's interesting. It's a white rabbit. And then the second time we saw it, we're like, I wonder if this rabbit's supposed to be here or if it needs help. And so I found Katie's information on one of the vegan Facebook pages and contacted her. And within a few hours, she had connected me with someone who had checked on this rabbit in the past and knew all about it. And so that really eased my mind that I found out, yes, it is a wild rabbit and it's okay, and that, you know, people have checked on it. So I really appreciated that put me at ease.
I was really concerned about a white rabbit before too. So the same person I actually connected you with, we went out for like 2.5 hours one day in the neighborhood, and we finally caught it. And it turns out it was just a cottontail with a mutation, so we let him back go. But that was the first time I'd seen a white rabbit as well that was wild.
Yeah, it was definitely unexpected, but like I said, I really appreciated you connecting me to someone so I knew that it was safe, and for you going out and checking on it prior to that.
Oh, anytime. And it's like one of those things, it's like I think all the rescues right now are overloaded. And so we just try to work with as many local rescues as we can and stuff to check on all the buns, make sure everybody's safe, and just get all the buns to safe places, because nobody can keep up with the surrender request or the dumping request, anything like that.
Let's talk about how the rescue got started.
Yeah, so my name is Katie. I'm 22 years old. I started this when I was 21, and when I was 20, I didn't realize that people ate rabbits for meat. And then I went to college in kind of a rural town in Kirksville. And are you familiar with Kirksville is?
I am. I don't know if our listeners here in Portland will be.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's up in the northwest corner of the state. Is that
it
right?
It is.
Okay. North of Missouri.
Yeah. And the thing, though, that's important is that it's super rural. And so one day I went to a very rural petting zoo. I got to talking with the owners. They had these beautiful Californian white rabbits, and they were like, yeah, after the petting zoo's over, we're going to cull them, send them to freezer camp. And I was like, what? Like, that was crazy to me. So I snuck him in my dorm room, and then he was like a free roam bun until Debbie narked on us. And then I brought him home, and then I started catching dumped bunnies in the neighborhood. And then after I caught a few dump bunnies, I got called to work on a horde. They said, oh, there's only 4 rabbits in this home that need help. There was over 30 alive, numerous dead, which was insane, because like looking at the outside of this property, you'd be like, okay, like it's an upscale area. Of course, they're not going to have any rabbit issues. And it's like, you never really know what's going on behind closed doors. And so the calls just never stop coming. And a lot of times we get calls and it's just, they're always very different. They're always surprising. And so within the past year and a half now, because it's almost December, we've become a licensed 501c3. We have a whole team of volunteers for fostering, transporting, rescue. So like we go out and catch dump bunnies, things like that. And this quarantine side project has really just snowballed into something incredible.
Wow, I'm glad to hear that. And that seemed to happen so fast.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting it, that's for sure.
So you're based more out of St. Louis now, or what other areas do you cover?
So we're primarily based out of St. Louis, and we don't have a main facility. Instead, we just utilize foster homes. And this is to make sure that all the rabbits get enough attention and socialization. But we also have helped start a rescue just over the border in Illinois. And that one, it's called Lily Bun and Friends Rescue. And they're very much a fledgling rescue, but they're doing great so far.
Okay. Could you repeat that again?
Yeah, it's called Lily Bun and Friends Rescue.
Okay. So that one's a little newer. Are you affiliated with them?
We're not necessarily affiliated with them. but it was actually one of our fosters, and she did such a great job with us. And she was like, I feel like I can do more. I feel like I can help more, because before you transport bunnies, because RHDV2, it's a rabbit virus going around, they have to have a quarantine period before they go over state lines. So we weren't able to bring in a lot of Illinois bunnies that needed help. So she decided, she was like, I'm going to do it. So that's kind of how her rescue got started.
And tell us more about how the rescue is going now.
It is, we are one of the largest rabbit rescues, I would say, in the country, but definitely in Missouri. We have a series of foster homes. I have three bunnies. I started out with one, and then I adopted Dolly on accident. I actually had a home for Dolly, but she was so aggressive, I thought she'd be put down anywhere. So she stayed with me, and her name is now Dolly, and that's actually what we're named after. And then last weekend, I adopted a third rabbit. And I think that's the biggest issue with having a foster base is, like, for me, I foster rabbits all the time. And then I wound up adopting three. So I have three personal rabbits, and our fosters wind up adopting. So we're continually, like, very low on fosters, but it's a good problem to have because, you know, you always want your fosters to fall in love. Like, that's always the goal.
Right. But then don't they call that, like, a foster fail?
That's like exactly right.
But like you said, it's a good thing, except for, yeah, you know, that's what I sometimes think about fostering either cats or now. That I've been, you know, watching your page about rabbits, but then I'm like, I think I would probably want to keep them.
I know, and some people it's like, oh, I don't want to lose you. Like, I'm so bummed they want to adopt. But at the same time, like, I know that bunny or the pair is going to be absolutely spoiled for the rest of his or her life. So it's totally worth it. But I just moved into my first home, which I got because I was like, I'll have more space for the rabbits.
Oh, that's good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So where, you kind of alluded to a few places where these rabbits are coming from, but it seemed, you know, I just had no idea that there were all these rabbits that needed homes. So tell us a little bit about where they're coming from and what's happening with that.
So yeah, I didn't know they needed this many homes either. And like the amount of requests we get each day is overwhelming. Like today we've gotten 8 surrender requests. Typically we, like if a meat farm is shutting down, we go take their fryer rabbits. That's what they call them, like meat mutts. Like Dolly and Elvis, two of my three bunnies were actually from butchers. We also take bunnies that have been dumped outside. That's a really big one. Like people will literally toss them out of car windows. People set them free in neighborhoods and be like, it's okay, they can survive because cottontails survive outside, without understanding that they're actually a totally separate species, so they can't survive outside. We get a lot of owner surrenders and breeder surrenders. And the worst thing for me is picking and choosing who gets to come into the rescue and who doesn't. Because with over 40 surrender requests a week, we clearly can't take them all. So it's kind of like picking and choosing who needs help the most, who needs help the fastest. And something I don't like working with personally is the breeders. And people are like, there's responsible breeders, which we don't have to get into, but I'm not a fan of that. But right. There are a couple breeders who are always like, hey, can you take this Rex for $75? And I'm always like, unfortunately, no, like we cannot put money back into the cycle. We do not pay for rabbits. We just rescue them. Cause like buying them would be going against everything we stand for. And that money could go to help another bunny. So then these breeders sometimes, and there's just two that I know of that have done this to me, they'll send me pictures, and I don't know if you want to include this, but like of the skinned rabbit and stuff. And they're like, well, you didn't buy them, so here's what happened.
Wow.
And I feel like horrible about it. But at the end of the day, there's not that much we can do, because if we put money into buying bunnies, like if I paid $75 for the Rex that somebody like skinned and stuff for meat, and then it's like, they could buy 20 bunnies or more with that money. So at the end of the day, if we do start purchasing bunnies to get them out of situations, then we're actually hurting more than we're helping.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, like on social media, that's typically what a lot of vegans think. Sometimes, of course, there is some controversy about that. And I think it is hard, especially like if you see the animal right up front, you know, right in person, it's difficult. So yeah, I mean, we don't need to get into all of that, but I mean, yeah, it's a really tough situation, but I'm really appalled that they would send you those pictures.
Yeah, no, we were too, and it happened more than once, and we were like, holy cannoli. But like, I see why people quit rescue now. Like, I never intended to get into rescue. It wasn't something I planned on. I don't think it's something most people plan on. I think they just kind of happen into it. But we helped start another rabbit rescue in Springfield, Missouri, which you're probably familiar with where that is. For everybody else, it's kind of rural Missouri, kind of not. But she actually quit because so many people were dumping rabbits that she like couldn't keep up. And then everybody was like, I'm going to kill them if you don't take them. And she couldn't deal with that, which is understandable.
That's really disturbing. But I think that message does need to get out there.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, it's like such a bummer when people do those things. And it's one of those things, it's like, help where you can. And so that's kind of like why we're totally volunteer-based and everything, because so many people are starting to see like what's going on behind the scenes with all these bunnies.
And then you mentioned before that these rabbits are not the same as your outdoor cottontail rabbits, that they're exotic animals. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so cottontails and domesticated European rabbits are actually two totally separate species, although they look the same. And so like rabbits, domesticated rabbits can't get wet. Like if you put them in the bath or something, it takes them so long to dry, they'll probably get pneumonia. And it's really likely that they'll die or go into shock. But like cottontails, you see they get wet in the rain all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's one main difference between them. They also like, they hop differently. They like have different patterns and everything. Like everything they eat is like slightly different. But people, I think the biggest mistake is that, oh, I don't want my bunny anymore because we get so many requests like this. I'm just going to set them outside because they can live like that. But like domestic European rabbits, they're like really prone to like botfly, heat stroke, like predators and stuff, because a lot of rabbits that people dump aren't a gouty colored, which is like the brownish color that cottontails are. So like people dump white rabbits and stuff, and of course that makes them a moving target. And domesticated rabbits are actually exotics, which is something we really hit on in our free virtual education course. But they're exotic, and one of the main reasons is because they're so prone to GI stasis. So rabbits have to continually be eating hay in order for their GI tract to continue moving. And if it stops moving, they stop eating or pooping for about 8 hours. That can actually be fatal to them. And GI stasis is one of the most common issues of rabbits. It can be like reoccurring, or can just be kind of like a one-off event due to stress or an injury or something. But that's like why they're exotic primarily. And when people think of rabbits also, they also think, oh, like they can just live in a cage, you know, whatever. A cage is way too small for a rabbit. We always recommend a 4x4 puppy pen. No water bottles, just water bowls. And there's just so many things that go along with them. They're really easy pets if you have the right information.
I had a couple more things before you go. So I always think like people want to get bunnies for Easter as gifts, but I think I've seen on both of your social medias that Christmas is also a time that people want to give bunnies as gifts, not realizing how long they live and what kind of care they need. Is that what you're finding?
It absolutely is. We've actually had some requests already this season for Christmas bunnies for a 2- and 3-year-old, other situations like that. I just made a post on our Facebook about it today, actually, just because we've started to get so many requests. And we're not necessarily opposed to Christmas bunnies. We think that impulse purchasing them is a very bad idea because you don't know what you're getting into. But if somebody's like, I want a rabbit around Christmas time, I want to consider it a Christmas bunny, it's for myself or my family member whom I live with, and they take a free virtual education course, they learn how to care for it and stuff, we're not opposed to adopting out a bunny, but it has to be like a completely vetted and responsible situation. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost, because you can go to all these different farm supply stores and you can buy a bunny for $10, $15 easy, but then you get the cage and then you don't spay them or neuter them, so they get uterine cancer, become aggressive and spray pee, and then that's when people are like, they're having so many behavioral issues I didn't expect, they're not cuddly and fluffy at all, I can't keep them anymore. And so a lot of what we do see with holiday bunnies, it's and like the holiday bunny dumping or surrendering, it's not necessarily maliciousness, it's just miseducation.
And you have a class on how to take care of rabbits?
We sure do. If anybody wants to go to our website, dollysdreamhome.org, it's dollysdreamhome.org. There is a spot there to sign up for a free virtual education course. And anybody anywhere is totally welcome to take it.
That's fantastic. That way people can get a better understanding before they commit to adopting a rabbit. Are you on social media too? I know I've seen you on Facebook. Do you want to?
Yeah. So we do have a social media. We have an Instagram, a TikTok, and a Facebook. Our website's also pretty big, but we do primarily use Facebook just because that's like kind of our target audience. We don't want to use Instagram all the time for everything because we're not trying to adopt out to people under the age of 18.
Well, thanks so much for being here. And your website is already on the KBOO page for that vegan show, so people can go to that if they didn't catch it right now. I really appreciate you being here and spreading the word about this. This is something, you know, I didn't realize was such an issue, and I think it's really important to shed light on that. So thanks so much.
And thank you to Melissa for having me today. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Definitely. All right. Thanks. Take care.
You too.
Next on That Vegan Show, we have Island from Avalon Micro Sanctuary in Portland, Oregon. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad to be able to share all this information about rabbit rescue and foster. It was something I wasn't very aware of. So thank you for being here to tell us your experience. How did your sanctuary start?
Yeah, so my rescue started about 2 years ago in June. Instead of having a Sweet 16 for myself, I decided to start a micro sanctuary after a very poignant presentation to my parents about how we should rescue one animal, and then that number turned quickly into hundreds. Yeah, so I've had a passion for doing this kind of animal rescue stuff since I was really young. I vividly remember at one point when I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, I was crying because I was asking my parents if we could go to the pet store and buy all the snakes and let them go, which is a horrible Aww. Idea, but that's the same kind of sentiment I've already had. So in regards to rabbits, we fostered 4 bunnies for a fellow micro sanctuary in St. Helens in July, and we were totally hooked, and we really had no idea that it would snowball and, you know, rabbits would become such a big part of our lives. And then mostly bunnies and small animals have been coming to us as time has passed, but we're still doing our best to try and take part in the rescue of any animal that may need help.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for being there for the animals. I'm sure it's a lot of work, but definitely something you're passionate about.
Yeah. I mean, seeing them happy, just that's all I care about, the work, you know, the tiredness and the pain and all that. It kind of gets canceled out when you see how them living their best lives and being happy and everything.
I love to hear that. So tell us about what's going on with the rescue currently.
So currently we are still networking a hoarding case in July. We did about over 100 rabbits from that hoarding case. They were from Albany, Oregon, and a woman let her farm run rampant, posted an ad on Craigslist saying, "Bunnies for free, come get them." And I inquired out of curiosity and also horror, of course. And she sent me pictures of hundreds of rabbits living in old car parks. They didn't have any hay. They were eating moldy carrots. Upon going onto their property, I actually had to separate a rat attack from one of the rabbits. I have a huge scar on my hand from that.
Wow.
Their water was moldy. It's really gross. So obviously with such a large number of rabbits from that case, we're still, you know, working on that. And of course all the females were pregnant too. A couple days ago, I took in 5 babies who escaped from a meat farm, and well, their mother did. And then she gave birth under someone's house and they kindly brought her inside. she's downstairs right now, but one of them is in her own little cage and she's flopped on her back, and we named her Fizz. And I have two more boys coming in tonight after we're done here.
I know, I'm just from Katie's page and your page, I just had no idea there was such a high need for rabbits.
Right? I had no idea.
Fosters, yeah.
Yeah.
So have you seen a lot of hoarding cases?
I have. I haven't necessarily been able to help as, you know, directly in all of those cases as I have with the one in July. But yeah, I've seen at least 4 or 5 large hoarding cases of like 100 to 200, like somewhere in that range, in Oregon and Washington this year. And then of course there's been smaller cases of animal hoarding that don't just involve rabbits. There was a house that was full of chickens and ducks and turkeys, and baby rabbits were running around everywhere. So we were working to kind of help all of those animals and everything. But mostly we're seeing numbers around, usually with the hoarding cases, more like 10 to 30 is the most common, I think.
Okay, that's still quite a few to find. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I assume a lot of them have medical issues that need to be attended to.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So you said when we talked earlier that you've noticed that sometimes when people adopt or foster bunnies and you get to know them a little bit better and they get to see some of the conditions where these bunnies are coming from, like meat producing facilities, that sometimes it kind of opens their eyes, not just about rabbits, but about other animals.
So I fully believe that these bunnies are like such a huge like eye-opener for so many people, as you just mentioned. I can see a lot of that in the sense that every single person I've ever fostered to adopted to, you know, if they have a bunny from us that came from a slaughterhouse or has a really storied past like in the meat industry like that, even babies who really don't know like where they didn't experience a whole lot of their time in their life there, we tell them where they came from. And sometimes I have pictures of the conditions, and you know, I take before pictures of what they looked like, and you know, you can see these rabbits and a lot of them have like mites and they're super scared and you can see it in their eyes. And then you know, there's this bunny in front of you now that's going to a place that's full of love and where no one's ever going to treat them like that again. And it's seeing them come so full circle and hearing where they were before is both heartbreaking and the most powerful thing in the entire world. I've had people, you know, the look that they give these rabbits, which is one of just pure love and adoration, you know, they also have like, there's a sense of horror figuring out where they came from before. And I think it really speaks volumes, especially to people who aren't too well versed on what happens in slaughterhouses for any animal or just the meat industry in general. Meeting one of the animals that survived that industry can change hearts and minds. And I've seen it happen all the time. People start talking to me without me even prompting a conversation about how they would never eat a rabbit. And in those silences that follow those conversations, people have told me afterwards that they're now looking at the industry that slaughters animals so much differently. So much more different than they previously would have, because, you know, they're welcoming one of its survivors into their home. And they're able to, you know, see that just because you're able to slaughter an animal and that people do doesn't mean that you should. And these rabbits having the amazing personalities that they have and that all animals do, and them being weirdly a little more societally acceptable to have in your home as a companion has really just turned some gears for some people, which is an amazing thing. They're wonderful, and they really do just change minds. Like, it's incredible.
That does sound incredible. I was really surprised, because sometimes people are really stuck on, you know, these animals we can eat and these animals we can't, and I guess rabbits are kind of in the middle. They're not necessarily something everyone typically eats or is on the menu at places. Yeah. So I guess that makes sense how it, and like you said, it, they train, you know, could have them in their home. So it kind of makes sense how they could transfer their thinking in this situation, whereas, you know, obviously you can't have a cow in your home, and cows are very sweet and loving, but if you never meet one, you're not going to necessarily know that.
You get to share your space with them, and you get to like just watch how they grow and live, and then you realize that they are, you know, if you didn't have this mindset before, that they have their own agency and they can feel pain and emotion. They have very distinct personalities. I can especially attest to that for the rabbits. They're really funny.
Aw. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, all animals have such distinct personalities, and when you don't, you're not around them, you don't realize that. So that, yeah. I'm really glad that this is not only rescuing these bunnies, but it's potentially rescuing other animals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about the grooming and bonding work that you do.
Yeah, so my sanctuary, because I do a lot of transport in general for animals, I'm kind of all over Oregon and Washington pretty often, and that gives me a nice ability to do house calls for grooming. So I kind of do like a sliding scale in terms of like payment, because I do like to, you know, take donations back for the spay and neuter program and, you know, our emergency vet funds and that kind of stuff. But I'm able to just do grooming, and I honestly just love to like be able to go to people's homes and make sure that their rabbits are, you know, like happy and healthy and that their nails aren't hurting them. Rabbits need scent glands cleaned, especially if they're unneutered nails. So I usually charge $35 if I'm traveling, but I would easily and do often just do it for free. You know, I want to make sure that people everywhere in Oregon and Washington can have access to someone who can groom their rabbit, just because finances shouldn't be a reason that, you know, an animal in your care can't be comfortable and happy. So I'm happy to do it, you know, free of charge. And I also do calls here at the house. I set up a little pen and all of our grooming supplies in a separate area that isn't inside with the other bunnies because of the RHDV2 virus, even though everyone inside is vaccinated for that. I'm just a little cautious. And then in regards to the bonding, I've done most of my work with that, you know, helping people bond their rabbits over Zoom calls, where I can, you know, kind of assess visually what's going on with the buns, check out their body language and the physical cues they're giving each other, and just advise on a couple of tips and tricks, really, to see if we can't get their bunnies to fall in love with each other.
Aw. And does that happen most of the time? Some tricks of the trade that helps?
You know, it really, as much as I would like to have so much control over, like, you're going to bond with you, you know, that kind of thing. I really like, they have preferences over like the rabbits that they want in their lives. Like bunnies are totally like us in the sense that they will like, you know, we just wouldn't go around and just see a random person necessarily and just say, hey, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. Like we have preferences and they do too. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it takes longer. I have two bunnies downstairs that hated each other for 6 months, and then one day I saw them kissing each other through the bars and like licking each other's faces. I know, they're crazy. And then I have two slaughterhouse rescues downstairs named Huckleberry and Meadow, and they are my babies, and they were, you know, falling in love first sight, and they've been inseparable. Meadow went into stasis when Barry was away from him for like 30 minutes. So I physically can't separate them because they love each other so much. But yeah, it usually works out.
What is stasis?
Yeah, so GI stasis or gastrointestinal stasis is kind of when the gut inside of a bun stops moving. That's the word stasis, where that comes from. It can happen when rabbits are stressed. It can happen when they are sick. It can especially happen when they're in pain. And it is probably, I would say, like the most common ailment that I've seen rabbits everywhere. You know, when you're looking at concerning symptoms involving rabbits, like most people, they're most concerned about it being stasis. Stasis is very serious and it is life-threatening. It can honestly onset for a number of reasons, even no apparent reason. It requires syringe feeding, this thing called critical care, which is like a hay blend that's in water to get their gut moving again. Sometimes they need medication like metoclopramide, which is what we have here. But it requires a trip to the emergency vet if you don't have the stuff to manage it at your house. It's very scary. So I'm really glad that Meadow made it over the hump with that. We've had a couple cases of seemingly random stasis here, and it's not fun at all.
Well, it sounds like you know how to handle it. But are there a number of vets in the Portland area that do care for rabbits?
So the clinic I work at cares for rabbits. There are a bunch of people I know that at clinics that see rabbits, but in regards to like exotic specialists, there are like far too few in my opinion. And even less in terms of like emergency care centers that can see rabbits. One of the emergency care centers in my city recently just stopped seeing them, which is really unfortunate. And they are very, very expensive if you do have to go. And I really hope that at some point that can change or just become more accessible, because I've seen way too many posts online or on Facebook about people who are seriously considering like not bringing their rabbit in for emergency care when they really need it because they can't afford it. And of course, that's, you know, when you're faced with a sudden $3,000 bill at the vet, that is a completely reasonable thing to be going through. The other, you know, probably 2 months ago, a woman contacted me about her rabbit and they really, really needed to go to the emergency vet, and she just said, I can't afford it. So we actually paid, I think, $2,200 for her bunny to go get in an oxygen chamber for like 3 days and get a bunch of medication, and he pulled through luckily. But it's stuff like that that is just really terrifying to think about, you know, how much that costs.
Is this something that happens a lot, or is it fairly rare,
the vet visits themselves?
Well, the serious ones, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it's kind of hard to say. So for us, not so much, but I'm very blessed in the sense that I'm able to have a lot of medications on hand in my own home. You know, from previous vet visits as well, I have extra medication, and the relationships I have with vets have allowed me to have, you know, get easier access to those kind of things. In regards to how often I see other people go into the emergency vet, I see it pretty often. You know, if I'm just thinking about people I know, I probably see it one or two times a day at least. And it's mostly for stasis, or this thing that people call snuffles, but it's actually pasteurella, which is an upper respiratory infection, because that's really, really dangerous for rabbits. They can't breathe out of their mouth for long. So you know, if you see open mouth breathing, that's a trip to the emergency vet right there. I'm making it sound a little bit like, you know, they're just super fragile and will suddenly start caving to certain medical pressures for no reason. I don't mean to come off like that at all. There's a lot that can go wrong, but it doesn't necessarily happen all the time. They're pretty hardy, but you know, when you're around so many, it just seems like you always have rabbits going to the vet.
Sure, you're around a lot more than some typical person would be. I was wondering how rabbits get along with other companion animals, like cats or dogs.
So it honestly, again, depends on the personalities of both animals. Some rabbits are a lot more chilled out than others. Some, you know, will have like a natural and healthy fear of dogs and cats. But for rabbits that I know that do really well around animals like that and really aren't phased, which is a lot of them, honestly, which surprised me a lot, they can do super, super well together. And of course, it depends on the prey drive of the said dog and cat. And you know, doing safe and supervised introduction times and if they're spending time together to make sure nothing happens. But I have bunnies I've adopted out. I actually just got a picture the other day of one of the bunnies we adopted out named Blueberry, and he was sitting on top of his best friend, who's a cat, and they were just sleeping together. There's a cat named, what's his name? I think Chaka, and one of our bunnies, Bentley, who are both the same color, and Bentley's from a meat farm, so he's kind of the same size, and they're best friends.
Aww.
Yeah, I honestly see more bunnies and cats being friends than bunnies and dogs, but I've had some adoptive homes and foster homes where they just fall in love with each other, and it's the sweetest thing.
Oh, that's great to hear, because somebody might already have an animal at home and not sure if a rabbit would fit into the mix or not.
Yeah, it's just super important, of course, to supervise. You don't want to just dump rabbits in with cats or dogs who haven't been around them before and just see what happens. So
okay, and I think this is a good segue into our last segment, which is vegan tips. And we were going to talk for a few minutes about rabbit care and like what you need and avoiding pitfalls.
Yeah, in regards to rabbit care, there's a couple things to consider. First of all, I would mention housing size is a lot larger than is common and commonly advertised in pet stores, which do not typically even sell the proper supplies you need to make a home big enough for a rabbit. House Rabbit Society recommends a 32x32x24, so about, you know, like a 3x2 space. And for our rabbits here, we make sure that everyone has at least a 4x4 X pen. And then if it's a bonded pair, we connect two exercise pens, which makes about a 6x2 or 6x4 area. Can't really remember the numbers right now, but it's a lot larger than those little plastic Petco cages that are often sold. We actually go by the sentiment that the bottom of those cages should be used as litter boxes. And rabbits can be litter trained, and all of ours are. Everyone that we adopt or foster out is litter trained, and I honestly can usually litter train them in a matter of days. It's kind of just a matter of throwing their little bunny poops in the potty box and they'll just kind of get the hang of it. They're really clean. They like to have, you know, cleanliness in their area and their little corners for everything, which is adorable.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that rabbits could be litter trained until I started following you and Katie's pages. What do rabbits generally eat in a day?
Yeah, so everyone will say something different universally, and what we do is we feed 80 to 90% Timothy or orchard grass hay for adults. And I know that a lot of people who want to get bunnies are actually like allergic to grass hay, which can be like a, you know, like that's a dead end, it seems like. But most people are less allergic or not allergic to orchard grass if they are to Timothy, which is the more common one. So I'd encourage people to check that one out if they have issues with the Timothy hay. And then we feed Oxbow brand pellets or Sherwood brand. We just do that because they have no fillers. They don't have formaldehyde. They don't have pork fat, which is what I saw on a couple rabbit food labels, and it was nasty. We make sure they don't have corn or anything like that, or anything that's going to, you know, act like kind of one of those meat feeds and fatten them up and get them all unhealthy and everything.
Because they don't need to eat meat, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
But for some reason, there's some in the food.
Yeah, it's so weird. I looked at that and I thought that I was misreading something, and I was so shocked by that. And I shouldn't have been.
When you first go vegan and there's milk and corn syrup, which we could eat, but
oh, yeah.
I don't want to eat. There's milk and corn syrup and soup and everything for some reason.
Right? So. Yeah.
Okay, well, we are coming to the end here. I wanted to give you a chance to give your website and social media in case people want to know more or maybe foster a rabbit.
Yeah. So our Facebook is at Avalon Micro Sanctuary, and Avalon is A-V-A-L-O-N. And that's also our Instagram. In the bios for each of them, we have our website where you can click, and there's applications to foster bunnies, and you can learn about our foster program. You can view our adoptables under the adopt tab and apply to adopt. And you can also book me for grooming appointments and check out our resources on rabbit care that we've taken from vets and pretty reputable sources.
Great. And I also have your web page on the KBOO page for this show. So if people can't write it down right now, that's another place to reference it. Well, I really appreciate you being here and telling us all about your good work. And I appreciate you doing the hard work to take care of these animals.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we will be back on the air next month in December on the fourth Friday at 11 a.m.
Thank you. You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.